In May, the UN Special Representative on the issue of sexual violence and conflict, Pramila Patton, traveled to Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, where more than 700,000 members of the Muslim minority community have gathered since August in the wake of a military operation in Myanmar's Rakhine State targeting extremists. This was Ms. Patton's second visit to the region in 6 months, as she is especially concerned about the status of Rohingya women who reported being raped by the Myanmar armed forces during the crackdown, some of whom are now pregnant.
It is very hard to find out the exact number of children to be born of rape or who have been born recently, because I think all these pregnancies are now coming to term. In December, I recall the Ministry of Health of Bangladesh had cited 81,000 pregnancies. And I think the number may be a lot more, because we are dealing with a community that traditionally they have not had access to medical care. You also have the stigma of a pregnancy as a result of rape. And in fact, there are many reports from local Rohingyas that many girls, especially young adolescents, are actually hiding the fact of their pregnancy and will never seek medical care, for example, for the delivery.
I'm Deanne Penn, and welcome to UN Gender Focus, a podcast from the United Nations. This episode is part of our ongoing coverage of the Rohingya crisis, and you can find additional news reports, features, and podcasts on our website, which is news.un.org. My colleague Mustafa Al-Gamal spoke to Ms. Patton shortly after her return from Cox's Bazar, where she met with various Rohingya refugees, from women and girls to new arrivals in Bangladesh, to several young people serving as outreach workers in the camps with the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Mustafa asked Ms. Patton if there was a message they wanted her to convey when she returned to UN headquarters in New York.
I think the main message is that they urge the world to take this ongoing genocide seriously. They fear global indifference. They ask for justice. That is a message that echoes through all the encounters that I had in the camp. They want the perpetrators to be brought to justice. And they are very much aware of what's going on right now, that the genocide is ongoing against their people, and they want the whole world to know. I think one visit that has had a huge impact in the camp has been the visit of the Security Council. Now they put a face to the Security Council. They shared with me how members of the Security Council were shocked at what they saw, were outraged. They expressed very openly their outrage. And they are expecting no less that the members of the Security Council translate their shock and their outrage into concrete action.
We know from their testimony that rape was used as a weapon against them. Tell us about the tragic legacy of those rapes, which is many babies who are now being born in Cox's Bazar.
It is very hard to find out the exact number of children to be born of rape or who have been born recently, because I think all these pregnancies are now coming to term. In December, I recall the Ministry of Health of Bangladesh had cited 81,000 pregnancies. And I think the number may be a lot more, because we are dealing with a community that traditionally they have not had access to medical care. So it is not really in their culture, in their tradition to seek medical care. You also have the stigma of a pregnancy as a result of rape, which makes it very hard for them to come out openly with the fact of their pregnancy. And in fact, there are many reports from local Rohingyas that many girls, especially young adolescents, are actually hiding the fact of their pregnancy and will never seek medical care, for example, for the delivery. But what I must say is that UNICEF is addressing this issue. Mm-hmm. I was quite encouraged by my meetings with different social workers that I met who informed me of the community outreach activities that they have engaged with. So they have reached out to the community to have a feeling of what would be their stand vis-a-vis those babies born of rape. And it would appear that the community is quite willing to accept those babies. So they have indicated that those young adolescent and married girls who cannot keep the babies, the community is quite willing to accept the babies. So it will be, the babies will be kept within the community, and UNICEF is putting in place some foster care arrangements.
So the UN or its associated agencies have been already doing work on the ground to help these mothers cope with the stigma attached to these babies born of rape.
Well, I think there's a lot more work to be done. But what is interesting is that I think it's very encouraging that at least it's being addressed by UNICEF. But I think whether a baby born of rape is abandoned or is placed in an institution or is taken care by the community, I think the stigma will remain. My concern is also related to registration of birth, because I think there are broader issues of social identity and legal identity, but the registration of the birth of those children is in itself quite problematic.
And how supportive have men been to the violation that women and girls have suffered? What can be done to help encourage communities themselves to understand and help the survivors of sexual violence in general and in war in particular?
Well, how supportive men are is a big question, because when I met with the women in the women-friendly space, they raised very severe security concerns. For example, they all reported, especially the most vulnerable ones, the female heads of household, or those with young adolescent girls, they've been complaining about a lot of harassment and abuse. I received many reported incidents of men from the community at night slitting the tarpaulin of the shelter in the camp. You know that after five, no humanitarian agencies are allowed. So they are left to themselves after 5 p.m. And these women reported that there is no security after 5 p.m. and that men from the community would actually harass them at night. The tarpaulin of their shelter would be slit, and sometimes their daughters would be snatched or harassed, that they cannot access toilets at night because men are often sitting and waiting for young girls and for women to go to the toilets to harass and abuse them. They have spoken about attacks on young girls when they go and collect firewood. So there are some serious security concerns. And coming from the Rohingya, I mean, these are concerns, these are complaints against the Rohingya community. They also have mentioned, for example, trafficking and sexual exploitation, prostitution for the purpose of sexual exploitation, including with the collusion of Rohingya community, in addition to a host community. So to that extent, I have difficulty to respond to your question about how supportive the men are. I also got data about the very high incidence of domestic violence in the camp. And that is a manifestation also of the frustration. And that's coming to the solution. I think that more awareness raising is required, more psychosocial support, not only to the women, but also to the men, to the girls, to the boys, because these are also men who have suffered a lot during the crackdown in Myanmar, during their flight from Myanmar to Bangladesh, and they are idle in the camp without any livelihood support. So they resort to violence. And even I got the information about the male Rohingya clashing with the host communities, clashing with the law enforcement officials. So there are issues to be addressed. I think that it's very critical to work with religious leaders to work with the local communities. And I'm very encouraged by the initiative of UNHCR, for example, mm-hmm. that has actually included these young Rohingya women and men as outreach community workers, and they are engaging with the community, and they have intake forms where they are doing door-to-door and reaching out and trying to do some awareness raising. But I think there are many mosques, there are many madrasas on the camps. I'm trying to secure a framework of cooperation with the government of Bangladesh. And one of the priority areas is precisely engagement with religious leaders. In November and this time, I also met in Dhaka with the Islamic Foundation. And I'm hoping to work with the Islamic Foundation, which has an academy of imams that could actually reach out to the community.
Did any of the women and girls you spoke to say they would be prepared to return to the homes they lived in before the massive exodus in August?
They would be prepared to return only if they have a full citizenship right. But they doubt whether that's possible. They are very realistic about it. They would not go if it's not safe. They all seem to request some kind of a UN mission presence in Myanmar should they go back. But they do not look very hopeful. It's not the first time that there has been this kind of exodus. And for them, there's simply no trust. But I must say that they are very encouraged by the Security Council. They think the Security Council will help them, will support repatriation, but they want these guarantees of citizenship. And I was mentioning to you that I went to a transit camp where I met those new arrivals, and I asked them, but why did you wait for 9 months? Where were you in August? And they said that they fled their own village and went to other villages to seek refuge. But now there is a lot of the violence has renewed because they are refusing to take the national verification card. And they were talking about the gang rapes, the rape, the killings, the detention, the targeting of male babies, the mutilation of genital organs of men, of babies, extortion, a lot of arbitrary detention because of the national verification card, which according to them would strip them of any possibility of having citizenship right in the future, and which will make their position even more vulnerable.
Many people who have read or heard about the plight of the survivors wonder if the international community has failed them, or wonder if how can we stop it from happening again?
Well, there is a perception that the international community is failing these people. But I think that the international community is really struggling. I think the work being done by the UN agencies, the humanitarian aid workers, is incredible. One has to go to Cox's Bazar to see how they are coping with an emergency within an emergency. But I think it's also the role of the media to highlight all the good work of the UN agencies in dealing with this. But I think we should not forget that Bangladesh has opened not only its borders, but also it's the heart of its people, because I think the government of Bangladesh is completely mobilized on the Rohingya crisis. They are completely overstretched, but they are not pushing this community out of Bangladesh. They have signed agreement with Myanmar. They are prepared to respect their share of the agreement in ensuring that repatriation is voluntary. Now they have signed a memorandum of understanding with UNHCR, of which they are fully respectful. I have met in Dhaka with different ministers, from health to foreign affairs to women's rights. I have met with the commissioner responsible for repatriation, but they are all working for the Rohingya community. I think we should not forget that. It's not only the UN, it's not only the international community, but I think the government of Bangladesh, what it's doing should be also be acknowledged. But the government of Bangladesh needs a lot more support, because it's not only the problem of Bangladesh. The international community has to take responsibility, because we know that repatriation is not likely to happen in the near future. I think the international community should do more in terms of funding, addressing the funding gaps, addressing the funding shortfalls, ensuring that Bangladesh has the full support of the international community to meet the immediate, short and medium term needs of the Rohingya community, men, women, boys and girls. But I also think that it is the role of the media to also explain to the world the power of the veto of the permanent members of the Security Council and what is blocking, for example, a referral of this situation to the International Criminal Court.
That's exactly what I want to ask you. Like, how is Myanmar able to get away with all of that?
I think I have given you the answer. We started with a presidential statement last year in November. I have briefed the Security Council. The permanent members are not able to reach a consensus on anything when it comes to justice and accountability.
Do you think that visit the Security Council took to Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh would soften their heart and make them maybe able to discuss it more seriously and able to reach a consensus?
Well, I'm looking forward to also debrief the Security Council and also to hear from them. They have come up with a very strong press statement, but I hope the press statement will translate in something more, something stronger. And, you know, the Secretary General has appointed a new special envoy on Myanmar. I'm looking forward to work with her. And we are hopeful to find solutions together, the international community, the UN, the government of Bangladesh and the government of Myanmar. I will also continue to engage in a constructive manner with the government of Myanmar. When I was in Myanmar in December of last year and discussed the kind of technical support that my office could bring to the government of Myanmar, focus on justice and accountability, focus on capacity building of its armed forces. I'm still waiting for the government of Myanmar to come back on this joint communique. So I will be meeting with the permanent representative very soon to debrief him on my visit to Bangladesh, to see kind of the visit in Myanmar, and to see where the government is with regard to this joint communique. I think we have to encourage also bilateral discussions between Bangladesh and Myanmar, support the bilateral discussion for a constructive solution. We have to work towards repatriation. These people belong to Myanmar. I think all the UN agencies, UNHCR is working very hard. I think we have to work in a very coordinated manner to try and find a solution and engage in a constructive manner.
That's Pramila Patton, the UN official at the forefront of ending sexual violence in conflict, speaking to us in May after her latest visit to Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. Just this month, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, the UN Development Fund, UNDP, and the government of Myanmar signed an agreement which could pave the way for the Rohingya to return home, a positive step, according to the newly appointed UN envoy on Myanmar, Christine Shrana Bergener. But, as we heard, Rohingya women in the camps are watching developments with some reluctance. I'm Deanne Penn at the United Nations in New York. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the UN Gender Focus podcast.